Travis said I get to introduce this one.
Welcome to Self-Proclaimed Intellectual.
You've just got a smile and hang out with intelligent people.
Welcome to Self-Proclaimed Intellectuals.
That was good.
Was that right?
Yeah, yeah.
I came up with a really good introduction for this one. But I left the notes for it on my iPod, and
ooh,
I don't want to use it right now.
Battery dead.
That device.
Well, what's today's podcast going to be about, Adam?
I'm
testing your wings here, man.
I'm scared. It's episode 8.
Which is, by the way...
Ocho.
Is a... it's not a multiple of 2. It's 2 to the third. I don't know what that's called when it's like an
8?
Yeah. Yeah. 2 times 2 times 2.
8 is a square root of pi.
It is not. So once again, Adam, as of the end of this episode, we have doubled again. And yes, we will continue saying that until over 2,000 episodes.
We have, you know what we've actually done here? We've doubled a doubled double.
Yes.
I think.
High five.
Woo!
See if we can get picked up on the...
You get that?
Just splice in a sound effect. That's how good we are now.
I could splice in some cheering, like some audience noises.
Please do.
Because that's... I mean, have you ever watched the YouTube where you, like, Google your favorite sitcom...
Without the laugh track?
Laugh track?
Yeah, it's brutal.
It's depressing, actually, because the jokes really aren't funny. It's the laughter that makes you laugh.
You know, it's... Okay, so it's like when you go to a movie that's supposed to be funny...
Yeah.
And there's not enough people in the audience.
Yes.
It's not as fun.
It isn't.
Like, or you can't watch a comedy on your own because...
You might get angry with that drunk person behind you that keeps laughing loudly, but it's probably making your movie experience better.
That's probably true.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'll remember that next time.
All right. What do we got today?
Well, today, it's not exactly a themed podcast like the audio one was, but all the segments do have to do with technology and whether technology is bad. We have a philosophmores basically on the device paradigm on whether technology is bad, how much time we spend on it, is it bad? We have a thought du jour segment on virtual reality and its possible uses or impacts. And then we have a near the fringe on Roko's basilisk, which is such a cool term.
It just... hurts my mind.
And it is mind-bogglingly complicated, so we'll wade our way through that and see how we do.
Here's your tease for that. Roko's basilisk,
yeah,
is so crazy that a lot of highly intellectual people seriously like got to the point of throwing up and deleting this off the internet and trying not to let people find out about it.
Yeah, so as that's a great teaser. Here's an extra teaser as if you needed it to stick around. By listening to us tell you, we could be screwing you.
Yes. By listening to this podcast, you could be damning yourself.
Mm-hmm. The machines will torture you because you listen to this podcast. Sounds crazy. That's why it's near the fringe. We'll get there in a little bit.
All right.
Philosophmores.
I don't...
I'm going to do the podcast.
Welcome to our first Philosophmore. I'm looking straight at the computer, ignoring Travis because he has his shirt over his head like my 4-year-old does.
Dude, one of these days we're going to get a video camera in here and it's going to revolutionize everything.
How am I supposed to focus on this?
I'm sorry. Let me focus up here.
Okay. All right. Our first portion here is about the device paradigm. Did you know, maybe you didn't know this, this is actually an email request.
Oh, great.
Yeah. So
do we have an email that corresponds, or is it just thanks to somebody?
Having emails that correspond with it would be something that somebody that gets prepared does.
Okay. Great.
I'm not a prepared. But thank you to... Should we say full names? Are we allowed to do that?
Yeah. I mean, they want their 15 minutes of fame, too.
I don't think they're going to get 15 minutes from us. We have like 15 fans.
This podcast will be 15
out.
Minutes long, at least.
Give a statistic on that, Travis.
Who's this podcast brought to us by?
Nancy Funk.
Okay. Thank you, Nancy.
All right. The device paradigm was something, a term coined by Albert Borgman. And I didn't go, he has a whole book written on it. There's a lot of stuff about
sure.
it. And I kind of waded through it a little bit. Basically, what I can tell is... he breaks it down to two things, devices and things.
Okay. Do we have a distinction on what the difference is here?
The thing is something that one of the examples I saw is he compared like a fireplace, a wood burning stove, to a central heating system.
Okay.
The central heating would be a device. The stove would be a thing. And the big distinction there is that in order to run that stove, the fireplace, you have to chop wood, you have to prepare, you have to be at a certain level of ability. I'm not going to let my 4-year-old strike the match and light it.
Sure.
So okay. There's a lot more to, you're getting heat, but you really have to put a lot of thought, a lot of work. You have to use the thing to get to the end.
Okay, so a thing is something where you input something. A device is more you're consuming what has been prepared by
exactly.
Something. Okay.
When you turn on your heat, for most of us in our house, we don't ever even think about what's creating that heat.
Yeah, okay.
And definitely. Most of us have no idea how to fix it, how to prepare it, where the gas is coming from that goes into it. I mean,
So my car is a device because I don't need to know how the windows work or the engine works or the transmission works. Or,
yes.
Okay.
But then I guess I don't know what a thing would be compared to that. Walking?
Bicycle?
Even I would probably say maybe a bicycle, but even that, some people don't. I think most people understand how a bicycle works. Even if you can't fix the derailleur.
Sure.
You could probably at least, yes. But that's kind of his point. And his whole thing here is that we're starting to rely too much on devices, and we're going to lose a lot of our humanity. What's interesting to me about this idea is that he coined this term in 1984. So when we when we first brought this up and we first started talking about this, everybody's thinking, okay, so he has a thing against iPhones and tablets,
right?
Which were not even close back then.
Uh-huh.
Maybe some cell phones, I'm sure, but the big old bag ones and stuff like that. So it's interesting that he started to see this issue that long ago.
Interesting. So what did he give us any anticipated results or fallout from device paradigm?
I don't know if he had an end goal. I mean, he had some interesting quotes that I found, which he talked about the hidden dangers of technology and just our reliance on it and not knowing how the things work and not being able to work on it. But he brought up, he made a comment how if we rely too much on the devices, we won't ever have what he calls live a good life.
Interesting. He said lose your humanity, live a good life. What are his definitions? Is this just kind of a rustic guy? Or?
But that's and that's one of the things that kind of I wondered when I went to this too. Is this just a person trying to hold on to past ways?
Sure.
I'm not saying he is or that I believe that, but it's what is the point of it? And this kind of gets into, we're not going to focus this whole time on specifically the device paradigm. Labeled as that, mm-hmm. We're just going to get more into is technology, how much we're using it bad. But I think it kind of goes into a lot of that because if you want to be stereotypical and general here, you got all the older people who are all angry that we're using all these electronics and always looking at our iPhones.
Sure.
Is it that bad? Is the device paradigm, using a device a bad thing? Or is it people just trying to hold on to how back in the old days I had to go chop my wood to
gotcha.
Get my heat.
That's an enormous question. So
good thing we got an hour and a half.
Yeah, that's right. Both Nancy Funk's time is growing. So what do you think, Adam?
What I didn't want from this portion is for us to just say, well, you just gotta balance it.
Mm-hmm.
It can be good and it can be bad, but everything's bad if it's used too much, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. And although that's kind of true, I didn't want to just walk that line because it's easy to say, and although I partly believe in it, is technology bad? Are we using it too much? No, I think it's the way the world's going. I don't think we're ever going to stop technology.
Mm-hmm.
I think we need to hang on to certain things from the past because I think they're beneficial to us and enjoyable. It reminds me of, and I guess sticking with the heating thing, we went camping about a year ago with some family, and my nephew had never chopped wood.
Mm-hmm.
Not saying that I'm like, oh my God, he's never chopped wood. That's what are their parents teaching him at all?
Right.
But he's never done it. And for me, I'm just like, ugh, I gotta go chop some wood to make sure, for camping. He loved it.
Mm-hmm.
Just stood out there chopping wood for any time I could find some more for him to cut. So, but he spends a lot of time playing things like Minecraft and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So do I think we need to keep fireplaces in our houses to maintain what things were like in the old days? No, I mean, I think central heat is a great thing.
Sure.
But I think some of those other things we need to keep around just for physical reasons or for entertainment. I mean, I don't know. I don't know how to explain it, but no, I don't think we're going too far with the technology yet, but we'll see.
What do you think does mark a point of being too far for you?
That's kind of a hard question, because I think the world is changing, and I think the world will change, and I think the definition of how far is too far will change. Yes, I get a bit annoyed when you go to a restaurant and every member of the family is on their phone.
Mm-hmm.
How far is too far? Maybe when it does stop your interaction, your true interaction with somebody. I had a kick to the face the other day, a mental kick to the face.
Okay.
I feel I am on my phone quite a bit.
Uh-huh.
I've tried to stop it a little bit, but I feel I'm probably not too much. I was playing with my son the other day, and he was like, watch this. And he was showing me his Sweet Ninja moves.
Mm-hmm.
And I was watching, but then I went back to look at an email, and he said, okay, wait. Or he said, okay, I'll stop. I don't want you to accidentally miss something on your phone. I was like, oh, crap.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my four-year-old recognizes, and he's being such a good kid. And he's like, I will stop playing and trying to show you something that I think is amazing so you don't miss something on your phone.
Wow.
And
yeah.
And what happened then? I clicked it off and used it the rest of the night. Because I was just felt like crap. And I have tried since then to be a lot more purposeful about that.
Sure.
So for me personally, that was the cutoff.
Yeah.
When my four-year-old can recognize.
Was being impacted by it. Yeah.
You are focusing more on that phone than me.
So let me pitch to you a couple of different scenarios, and I'm gonna sort of argue against myself here, and you know that's kind of what we're all about, is what about this, well what about that, and you the listener can decide.
It's so, like, I have a whole list of things here that we just go over to decide if technology is worth it or not.
Great.
Yeah, good, go ahead.
So I think about you know, in spite of how interconnected things are and in spite of all the technology that we have, there is still no substitute for real human interaction, and I still think that there's a feedback that happens with the world when you develop interpersonal skills.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that in general, people that are more interpersonally skillful are going to be more successful in the long run.
Yes.
And so maybe people that are have a better balance or that use technology less have a better interpersonal skills, and they'll be the influencers of the future. Flip side, I read a Seth Godin, who is a big online influencer. He's one of the most brilliant marketing minds on the planet.
Okay.
I read a small article from him. I think it was from him. I'm sorry, Seth Godin, or whoever else, if it wasn't, that a keyboard is the most powerful thing in the world.
Yeah.
Nobody is going to change the world with a sword anymore.
Yes.
Nobody is going to change the world with whatever else, but with a keyboard, you can change people's opinions. You can change very real things about the world. And beyond that, because the world is run by technology, a lot of code runs the world.
Yes.
And a lot of the highest paid and most influential people in the world are those that know the code, that can write and manipulate the code that underlies a lot of what we
everything
take for granted in life. Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting because this goes into something that we've talked about doing a whole section on, which is Dunbar's number, which is basically tells us a thing that's been studied a lot that says you are only capable of having a close personal relationship with a certain amount of people.
Mm-hmm.
Beyond that, you really aren't connecting to them.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the number is usually put between 150 and like 230. So if I could only seriously impact 150 people, that pales in comparison to what I can do with a keyboard.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely.
So, yeah, I think you're definitely right that blogs and all these different things have changed, absolutely changed everything.
Mm-hmm.
And in
a lot
podcasts.
Of ways, it's that's right. So it's not, like you said, you don't want to just say, you know, well, it requires balance. And like you said,
yes.
While that's true, I think it's how you utilize those technologies. So there are people who use Facebook to gossip and to stalk their exes and, you know, to hook up with with people from high school and whatever, you know, cheat on their spouses on the down low. There are also people that use Facebook. They use the exact same tool to do something really constructive.
Yes.
And in a lot of ways, the technology and the interconnectivity removes barriers for people being entrepreneurs.
Yep.
You can go and start a WordPress blog for free. And it's possible that if you're dedicated and skillful enough, you can change the world. You can change your own world.
And websites like Kickstarter and stuff like that have changed a lot.
Yes, exactly. And that's so that's one of the things that when we talked about this technology is a bad thing, and we'll touch on this, I think, in the next segment too with virtual reality, is that you can almost always predict the surface level implications of something new. So when you said, okay, the internet, it's this online database where you can read things online, and people said, well, that's going to hurt libraries.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it did. And that's the obvious thing that happens on the surface level. But the deep level impact is a lot more difficult. You know, you couldn't have imagined that people would come up with something called crowdfunding, where you post a project and 1,000 other people donate $1 and then you can go through with your business idea. Yes.
Or back to the library thing, a lot of those books have just been put online.
Exactly.
And a lot of people that would have never gone to the library to get those books
It's expanded access. It's expanded education. Yeah.
Not to the physical building. But of those books in general, yes.
Yes.
Kind of going back to Bergman's thing, he says he has this thing he calls focal things and practices, in which he believes will help balance out the device issue. And there's simple things like playing music or being a part of music, learning an instrument, gardening, running.
Mm-hmm.
Especially long distances, and even what he calls culture of the table. So I'm assuming sitting down and having dinner.
Yes.
And I agree with a lot of those things.
I do too.
Although lots of times when I run or do some of those things, I do listen to my iPhone.
Right.
It definitely is it's a very different experience when you do it with your hands and when you really do understand some of that stuff. And so I don't think any of these things, hopefully none of those things will go away.
Mm-hmm.
I plan to make my child do things in the backyard, and I push them to. Do I let him watch some movies on the iPad? Yes, but I'm proud that if given the chance, do you want to watch a movie or go in the backyard and play? He'll still go to the backyard and play.
Sure,
and I think that's important to keep.
Yeah, yeah. So I do want to say this too. I think that there's a big perspective difference in people that have grown up with it, and it's kind of the underlying, you know, it's the status quo, it's the reality. Yeah. And I don't know if there's a generational difference between you and me. We're pretty close, you know, relatively in age.
Yeah.
I think that in a lot of ways, I interact with technology in a more personal way than somebody who is not used to that technology. Let me give you an example.
Does your computer have a name?
No, I don't think my computer does have a name, actually.
My computer's name is Linda.
Really? I name my guitars. I name my car.
Okay. What's your car's name?
My car's name is Destiny.
Huh.
There's a reason for that, too.
Okay, just say it, because...
Nope. I'm going to leave that hanging, and we'll get to that next time. That's just going to be up in the air.
You're going to have to listen to the next one now.
So for instance, I find that I connect very deeply with material that I listen to. If I listen to a lot of church and apologetic and spiritual related podcasts, and I find that that actually enhances my spiritual connection with God. I listen to a lot of business and leadership podcasts, and I consider those people to be digital mentors.
Yeah, and those that, and you would have never gotten that option information if we didn't have these devices,
right?
Because you would be going to your church or the school right next where you live, and you would be listening to that professor alone.
Exactly.
Not being able to,
That's right. And you do have to be selective about what you listen to. There are downsides to this for sure. I have a quote. I think it's from Ralph Waldo Emerson, and it's a favorite of mine. It's there are many things that a wise man would want to be ignorant of. I may have even read that on a previous podcast.
Yes.
But that's exactly it. When you have access to every bit of human knowledge, some of that is terrible or worthless it just isn't worth anything.
So I have a few random things we can kind of go through here. One thing I read through kind of some of this research are a lot of people really dog on the dangers of technology. And it's kind of an interesting thing is it bad, or is it just how things are changing? Right, Travis?
That's right.
You just want to go home, Travis? No. Okay, so one of the big things I saw a lot of people post about was spell check.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Kids are using spell check nowadays. They don't know how to spell. They're relying on the computer to spell it for them.
Well, and was it last podcast or this one that we mentioned the app that will do math for you?
Yes. Yeah, I think that was a couple weeks ago.
Okay.
It's one of those things for me as a teacher that I have to really think about. And I think a lot of people right now are probably thinking, if you have to think about that, that's terrible. They need to learn to spell. Yes, but again, how many things do we need to keep memorizing when other things will do it for us? And let's say, okay, so let's say I stop teaching my kids to actually spell, more of just a phonemic thing, and they just kind of, they can get close to it, and then the computer spells it for them.
Sure.
And then we just roll with that. And then 10 years from now, all computers collapse, and your worry is, well, then now they won't be able to spell.
If all computers, we're going to have problems with, like, drinking clean water.
Yeah, yeah. If all computers collapse in 10 years, we will not be worrying about how they spell.
Yes, that's a and big that's argument kind of the I have thing
to. Yeah. To me, is, and it's hard. I mean, and a lot of people are hanging on to the old ways. I don't teach cursive anymore.
Yeah.
I teach typing.
Mm-hmm.
Because whether cursive is important or not, and I think it does have a few specific aspects that do help kids, I'm not going to spend my time on it.
Yeah.
I'm not going to spend my time teaching cursive for the sole purpose of being able to sign your name
mm-hmm.
when I need to type when kids just can't type at all. And so I think a lot of it we're going to have to accept that mm-hmm. that's where the world's going.
Yep. I think so one of those, a very similar argument is calculators, right? Should kids learn yes. to use calculators or do math by hand? And I think that they need to understand math. But a lot of the computationally heavy stuff, who cares? I mean,
yeah.
if you're living in a world where you have access to no calculators or computers to do the calculations for you, you've got bigger problems than issues. Not being able to do yes. long division.
Yes.
Yeah, so I think that's a big thing.
Have you ever heard of debate.org?
No, I don't think I have.
I ran into I feel like I've been on it a long time ago, but I ran into it while searching a lot of this stuff. And it's kind of an interesting thing. Basically, they put a question out there, and then people say their feelings, vote yes or no. And so you get percentages on how many which way people believe. And one of their questions was, do you think technology is bad?
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of shocking to me how close it was. 52% said it's a good way, it's good, and that it's going in a good direction. And 48% said no, it's bad, and it's going too far, and people spend too much time on it, and all this kind of stuff. And that surprised me a bit. I understand there are a lot of people that think we spend too much time, but I think too many people are focusing on, we spend too much time on our iPhones.
Mm-hmm.
Do we? Yeah, we need to maybe put some more time in the people that are sitting across the table. But I feel that's what we see the most.
Yeah, but what other technologies are increasing productivity or mm-hmm. enhancing quality of life that we are taking for granted or
obviously ignoring. Medical and stuff like that. But mm-hmm. and a lot of them said, you know, of course they still want medical technology to progress. Well, you'd realize that medical technology can't progress unless yeah. all technology progresses.
Yes,
it's
yes.
kind of a, not necessarily all or none, but it does definitely
mm-hmm, mm-hmm. go together. It's related, yes.
Yeah.
So,
device paradigm, is it an issue?
If I were just to vote yes or no, I would say that technology is good. I think it's each person's, or in your case, yeah. each teacher's, each parent's mm-hmm. responsibility to make sure that there aren't critical life skills that are being lost. Chopping wood. I've never needed to chop wood, yeah. you know, and yep. and again, if I need to, then we're probably having worse problems yes. than my inability to chop wood. I think that so like the spelling thing, you probably don't need to be able to spell every word, but IQ generally correlates with vocabulary.
Both
so
vocabulary
yeah,
very
you do
much.
Need to mm-hmm. know words and you do need to be able to professionally communicate. So yep. should you be able to say the right version or, you know, type out the right version of your YOUR or YOU'RE? Yeah, I think so. There
absolutely.
Needs to be that.
And I flipped I didn't flip a lid, but I got the first time when I had a kid turn in a paper that used LOL in a serious research paper. I got a little annoyed.
Uh-huh, yeah.
So yes, there are definitely limits.
Right. Right.
There's a balance you have to find.
That's right. Well, and I think the more prevalent technology becomes in our lives, the more it's important to identify and teach those limits.
Yeah,
I think that as far as technology goes, as long as we understand what limits should be in place, we won't have completely lost ourselves.
I agree. And it's up to the parents to, if a parent believes that some of those old school things are important, to teach them. But I also believe that you are going to just do a disservice to your child if you keep them in front of those things.
Also
You know, I've read a few things of families that decide, you know what, there's too much technology. We're going to do without it for a year.
Mm-hmm.
When your kid goes to college and your professor says, you know, get on this website and do this, and you use your Chromebook for this. And that kid's like, I didn't do that stuff. They're at a serious disadvantage. Whether you agree with it or not, our culture is focused around that, and you've got to roll with it or not.
I agree with that completely. Cool. All right. Well, good discussion.
Long discussion.
Let's move on.
Yeah, we better.
Un petit ghetto, une station de métro, entourée de bistrots, Pigalle. Grand magasin, atelier de rapin, restaurant pour Rupin.
Thought du jour.
Là, c'est le chanteur des carrefours qui fredonne le succès du jour.
So we are now going to do the next segment, which is the thought du jour.
Yeah, cut that out.
Welcome to the next segment. This is a thought du jour.
Great.
Is that better?
Yeah, thank you.
I'm gonna leave that all in there because I find that kind of stuff interesting.
All right.
Anyways, what if we did this whole podcast while in virtual reality, and like virtual reality, and we felt that we were podcasting while cruising the countryside of a medieval town.
Mm, wow. Mm-hmm.
Or what even better?
Or
yet,
from space.
I was about to say that actually. Dude. What if we were doing? Pounded it. What if we were doing a podcast, a section on space, and we were in virtual reality, and we felt we were in space? Would that impact our ability to more clearly interpret things?
Oh wow! Yeah, I totally think so. That's amazing.
Yeah. There you go. If you hadn't gathered on it by now, this little segment is about virtual reality. Current uses, future possibilities.
Sure. Dangers, yeah. Probably,
dangers,
I assume.
Yeah, it could be dangers. How it could be misused.
Okay.
Let's roll through some of the ways it's currently using. I started the idea of talking about this because I heard a random few things about virtual reality. I'm going to start calling it VR from now on.
Please do.
Because it's going to be way easier for
virtual reality.
and it was just an idea that we'll get to later. And I was like, that's a crazy idea. So I kind of looked into it, and I didn't realize how much VR is being used right now.
Okay.
It's not quite the holodeck as in Star Trek. Are you a Trekkie at all?
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Good. We'll get to that
later. I like both Wars and Trek, though. And Battlestar Galactica.
Oh, man. I like that, too.
Next time.
I binge watched that. I'm also a Stargate fan.
That's the one that I'm missing here.
Yeah, and see, I liked Stargate, I believe it was Universe. I wasn't happy with the ending. Anyways, VR. Current uses. Did you know that they use it a lot for dealing with anxiety, with phobias?
You know, I actually was going to mention, I could see it being really useful for psychological treatment. So
it already is. Like, you know, I saw some stuff. If you're afraid of heights, which I don't understand the whole how we deal with those issues. Like, if somebody's afraid of heights, do you put them up high and make them deal with it?
Mm-hmm.
To me, from what I've read, it kind of sounds like it. That can be dangerous. So you put them in a virtual reality environment where they think they are.
Sure.
And
okay.
And if it's good enough, it will. Just your mind will see it. It also talks a lot about dealing with PTSD.
Mm-hmm.
Can you take a soldier back to those places and help him through dealing with being in Iraq?
Right.
No, that's impossible. So doing it through virtual reality is a completely safe way to
reenact or to face that fear. Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the big ways it's being used right now, and I hope being used more and more. And I think I had it written somewhere else, but it's kind of in the same idea, is even bullying. So we have a bully, and we can't get him to stop. So what if you put him in VR as the kid getting picked on, and he gets a completely different perspective.
So he has context for, he can sympathize then with.
And there's some other things in the same realm as that of people who maybe, you know, people who don't view the earth like they should, and they litter and they don't take care of it. And then they have a VR experience of a specific kind, and they come out having a different view of connecting to nature. It has some really interesting possibilities as far as your psychological nature of how it can change things.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I can see all those. So what are some other ones?
Training. These are kind of your obvious ones. You work in you're an engineer for aircraft, correct?
Uh-huh.
So I don't know if you've ever been in any of the aircraft simulators. The good ones, not the ones you get in, like, at the fair, like the roller coaster stuff.
Right.
I've been exposed to those through friends in different places, and those are insane. And the crazy thing about them is some of the ones I've been in are so good that you can get trained for a specific airplane.
Yeah.
You can get licensed for an airplane in a simulator. Wow. You never have to touch the real airplane or fly in real life. You can get licensed for that airplane completely in a simulator because that VR is so good.
Wow. Okay.
And this is kind of a sidetrack, but which blows my mind about this. If you ever see those simulators, they obviously move on different axes, and they'll tip backwards.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. While you're in there, and when you see it from the outside and you see it tipping back, you just imagine them as being an airplane going up. The crazy thing, it blows your mind, and you can't express how amazing it is unless you're in it. But they also tip back to show G forces. So while you're inside there,
if I
punch the throttle, but don't go up, just punch the throttle, the actual simulator will tip backwards. But I don't feel it tipping backwards because I'm seeing the screen that's just showing me going forward.
Interesting. And it like shifts your center of gravity. Yeah,
And I feel like I'm being pushed against the back of my seat through force of speed increase.
Gotcha.
Not elevation increase.
Right.
It's a mind blowing thing. But you think you would be in there and you'd say, oh yeah, I'd notice that it was going up, not mm-hmm, forward. Mm-hmm. No.
Well, heck,
you completely lose track of it.
In real life, you way overestimate or underestimate the degree of a plane. So there's definitely mm-hmm. a difference between sensation and reality.
Yeah. It is amazing. I mean the abilities of that, and like I read some other ones. Welding. They have welding simulators.
Virtual reality. Sure. Or combat training to go back to the military.
That's very expensive to deal with that stuff. Gander Mountain here in Wichita, and I'm sure other places, has a virtual firing range.
Mm-hmm.
You go in there, the gun that you use has CO2 in it, and gives a very similar kick to the real one. And the screens are almost at 360 degrees, and people pop out, and you have different simulations that you're trying to, somebody attacking you in your house and stuff, and you train without ever having to spend hundreds of dollars on ammunition.
Hmm.
So training is a huge, huge area for it. I think could be very interesting in the future.
Okay.
Saves a lot of money, possibly.
Well, and a lot of the... So for some reason, I keep going back to military stuff, but a lot of stuff is virtual now. So like drone piloting replacing actual physical piloting.
Yeah.
I mean, not only can you get a simulated experience, you can get the real experience, except for the actual drone that you're controlling isn't in the air.
Exactly. And I didn't have it written down, but the definition of virtual reality is pretty intense. Like, it's not, if you're playing an online video game and you're through the eyes of somebody, that's not virtual reality. Mm-hmm. It's more of an in-depth experience.
How many senses are we talking here?
I don't know.
Because, I think we probably have ways to simulate. Vision is probably the easiest one.
Yeah.
You put on the goggles or you're in a 3D room, something like that, with screens all around.
Yes, and then you got your obvious tipping backwards in different ways, so you got that feeling sensation.
Yeah. And I think I think there are some of the more advanced ones that control even sense. Like if you're wearing gloves, they'll give you point-based feedback on, wherever you're touching. It'll feel like you're touching something.
Well, and in the airplane, you're inside a real cockpit. I mean, it is a real cockpit that's been mm-hmm. adapted for this. Is it important to feed in faint wisps of smells? I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm sure it could make it more impactful, but... I didn't read anything about that.
Gotcha.
So, another one, which of course, if it's used in military and all these other places, it'll be used for entertainment. So gaming.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a lot out there for gaming that I think is true virtual reality, but one of them they called its cousin, which is like the Wii.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of, you're standing there in your living room pretending you're playing tennis, but you're playing it virtually online.
Right.
So it's kind of starting to get there, and that brings to an interesting topic of. Is that as good? What if virtual reality starts replacing real life?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That kind of steps into the holodeck thing, trekkiness. if you had a holodeck, you could experience everything as true as anything is true as reality.
Sure. I mean, what is reality, right?
So what is reality if it's just reality to you? They live their life on a spaceship, never going outside, but they use a holodeck to get those sensations. Is that real life?
Mm-hmm.
Would you be willing to live that way?
Oh, man. So there's a lot of ways that you could take that. One is that you're not interacting with actual people. You're not making an actual difference in the world. The other is that, I mean, so in some of those Star Trek kind of cases, people are incapable of interacting. Think about somebody who is in a vegetative state. What if they could be interacted with... What if you could put them in virtual reality and they're able to interact with their environment in a way that they physically can't in the real world?
Side note here. In the Star Trek holodeck, how they don't walk into the wall? Because obviously the room is limited.
Right.
And suddenly when the thing starts, it's unlimited. You can walk forever. How do they not walk into the wall? Because the walls are real.
Yeah, it's a great question. I don't know.
They create... The system creates a force field underneath their feet that...
Oh, that like moves like them back to... Okay. Yeah,
it moves them backwards. So they think they're walking.
Wow. Star Trek is they at least pay a reasonable head nod to science.
It was very interesting reading up on it. And when they first started, they were actually using replicators within the holodeck to actual import real mass and create real things. And then they realized some of those issues, and so then they started going to holograms that were enclosed in force fields. And just a lot of crazy stuff.
Huh, that's cool.
Anyways. That's off topic.
So I can definitely see on the downside, I think that it has a ton of upside. That's what we've basically been talking about. On the downside, we just finished talking about device paradigm and device addiction. And how much more potent is that if you can get all of your senses, in a virtual controlled environment that you play God, you know?
And that's what brings me to one of the thing that brought me to this idea in the first place. I think I can guess what you're going to say, but... If you had the option to live out the rest of your life in quote-unquote reality, possibly making a difference, or going to virtual reality, and let's say that it has been created in a way that it is utterly real to you, and live the rest of your life in a virtual world where everything is perfect, and you have the abilities to become anything.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say you could tie in your wife, because obviously the issues are, if you live the rest of your life in virtual, you won't be able to have kids. Some of these kind of things.
But you can simulate it.
You
can
have virtual kids. Right. Would that matter to you? And maybe you are married and then you are able to connect your wife into that virtual world and you are both able to live a perfect world.
Sure. No, I don't think so. Possibly, you know, because it sounds so foreign, because it sounds so simulated, so artificial.
Yep.
But partially because I think if you... don't have a baseline for normalcy, then those periods of accomplishment or, you know, fear or whatever, they mean nothing. And especially if no situation is dangerous to you because it's all protected, then I don't know. Is there any real...
If you just go jump out of a building, does it really... There'd be a time when you just say this isn't...
Picture it like a video game, okay? That you have like an infinite life...
Reset button.
Cheat code or something in or save points or whatever. If you have some sort of God mode cheat that allows you to do anything, it becomes less fun because the challenge is gone. And I think that if you take that away, I have no doubt that there are people that would say...
There would be a lot.
Let me do it. But I'm not one of those people.
I think there would be a lot. And this, of course, always, especially when researching this, leads into stuff like WALL-E, the movie WALL-E, and all those kind of things, when they're worried that this is where we will go, just living our life in a virtual world. And... which, again, this kind of gets into our next segment a little bit, but what if we are virtual right now?
Right.
You know?
Right. So one of the bases for morality, and is this a philosophical segment? I think the first one was. It's fine. So one of the bases for morality.
French have morality.
Some sort. it's a sexy morality.
Oui.
It is... it's sort of a utilitarian perspective of would I be okay? Okay, is this action right or wrong? And then saying if I would be okay with everyone doing it, it would be right. If I would not be okay with everyone doing it, would it be wrong? So let's just say littering. All right.
Okay.
If I feel like I'm just going to throw my cup out the window,
would
I be okay with everybody doing that? No.
No.
So it's not right for me.
Yeah.
In the same vein, would I be okay with everybody living their life in virtual reality? No, I think pretty much that halts human progress because of what I was saying earlier, because you stop needing the drive to progress. Yes. You can just feign that progression by programming it in.
Yeah.
And so I wouldn't be okay with everybody doing it. I wouldn't feel all right myself doing it.
When the other thing that popped into my mind just seconds ago is if you knew, and maybe when you get put into the virtual world, you're not allowed to know you're in the virtual world, which could affect some things.
Sure.
And but if you did know things like killing and murder and all sorts of stuff, you're not killing real things. Mm-hmm. You're killing virtual things. Mm-hmm. So suddenly people could, it could be, you know, you could lose a lot of your morality in situations like that.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting.
All I have to say is if I'm in a virtual world right now, my life should be a lot better. Just right. Kidding.
Up, down, down, left, right, left, right, BA start.
I should have a lot more money.
Near the fringe.
All right, Adam and I are over here rubbing our foreheads because just thinking about this segment is already giving us a headache.
No, it's, I have a rash. That's why I was rubbing mine.
Adam also has a rash. You're welcome for that piece of information,
a
folks.
A virtual rash.
So this is Near the Fringe, and we're talking about Roko's Basilisk. And I'm going to do the best I can to just tell you what Roko's Basilisk is. Roko's Basilisk is the idea that if there is ever an artificial intelligence that becomes so powerful that it essentially runs human life, it's possible that it could be somewhat malevolent, as in it's willing to hurt some humans for the benefit of other humans. So it's, again, utilitarian sort of approach.
Almost like how we would treat animals.
That's right, yeah. Maybe we are the basilisk. And the idea is, anybody that's heard of this theory, if they did not help that AI develop, then they are not acting in mankind's best interest, because that AI is the ultimate manifestation of man's best interest. And so, if you're not...
You can play that back if you need to.
Yeah, if you're not... once you've heard this, if you're not helping an AI develop that will control all of humanity, that AI will torture and kill you when it becomes a thing.
Because you did not help it become a thing sooner.
And because you knew about this concept.
So now that you know that there's a possibility of an all-powerful AI in the future that will know and be able to possibly look backwards into the past that you did not help it.
That's
that
right.
Your life did not help progress itself. It's nobody, no good for you.
We're all in this boat together, listeners.
Okay, I've got to throw a quote in here that I've been holding in for weeks.
Go for it.
Maybe you've heard this before, but I giggled for hours afterwards, and it connects with us creating an AI that takes over, robots, whatever you want to call them.
Uh-huh.
Two robots, especially at the beginning stages, humans are nothing but sex organs. We are technology's sex organs. Because we reproduce them. We produce them. And we create them.
Oh, I see.
And so until a point when technology cannot recreate itself,
we
are creating it for them. So we are their reproductive organs.
That's deep, man. That's deep and not slightly creepy.
So in order for me to... not be destroyed by the future AI, I'm going to be the best reproductive organ I can be.
Good on you, man. Good for you, buddy. Yeah. So what do you think about this Roko's Basilisk theory, Adam? Do you have any thoughts on it?
I think it's very interesting. I think it's a fun mind game.
Sure.
To contemplate. Do you want to go into the history at all?
Yeah, go for it.
Where it came from. It came from a forum called Less Wrong, all one word. Less Wrong is just a place where a lot of smart people go, way smarter than us, go to talk about things. And it's kind of funny because some person apparently brought this idea up, and the far more intelligent people got very upset. And some of them, as far as what I read, including the creator of that website, got really upset because of the fact that now that it is brought up, it could have damned us all.
Right.
I mean, people were seriously, seriously stressing out to the point to where they actually deleted the forum in hopes that it never got seen again. so that the idea was not spread further, causing more issues for humankind.
Wow. Well, at least they were honest with what they thought the implications of that belief were.
Yeah. I mean, make fun of them for what you think might be a dumb idea, but on the other hand, they did it to help save you.
Yep.
Maybe
yep.
you thought it was dumb, but their intentions were good.
And we're screwing you.
And so what do we do? Make it on a podcast.
Yeah, so I think one of the things that this touches on is just this sort of cold, functional, utility-based AI. What do you think technology will mean to humanity in the future? Is really the question that this asks.
I mean, for quite a while, I just envision it being similar to what it was, just far better. Like, how many brand new things have been created in technology?
Yeah.
Not just gotten better. TV. We haven't created TVs. They've just gotten incredible.
Right.
At some point, when AI comes about, I can't even begin to think exactly what that will cause. Because there's been so many movies on it, I can't determine if my thoughts on that are based off of what I saw in the movies.
iRobot, The Matrix,
There's been some recent ones. There was one that we watched the other day. I forget what it was called, but it was about a guy who fell in love with his AI. It was just on the computer. It wasn't even a robot. It was just artificial intelligence within his computer that would talk to him, and he fell in love with it.
Was it her?
It was a her.
I mean, was the title of the movie...
Oh, maybe.
Her.
I don't know.
Something, okay.
But then all of those... all those AIs realized how smart they were and basically left and somehow went into some digital world to create their own.
Yeah.
It was kind of interesting.
Another a very interesting piece of fiction from Isaac Asimov. Are you familiar? Isaac Asimov is...
Nope. I do know a few Isaacs.
Is either the or one of the only people to have published works in all of the Dewey Decimal System categories. Just a super prolific author. He wrote The Last Question, which I find to be a really good piece of work, and we'll put it in the show notes. But basically, in the future, humanity depends on this AI to answer all their questions and to keep them alive and stuff. And then humanity merges with the AI in sort of a very high level, you know, upload your consciousness sort of thing.
Yes.
I don't know. Asimov doesn't necessarily tend to be dystopian or view, like, you know, death robots as the future. But it's worth a read just to see if our dependence, if our, might even call it symbiosis with technology, with AI, were to run its course. It's kind of interesting.
It'll be interesting to see because we have obviously... as far as I know, AI isn't happened yet. True AI, you know?
Well, there's the Turing test. Have you heard of that?
No.
The Turing test is developed by Alan Turing. and it's a test to see if an artificial intelligence is smart enough to pass off as human to a human.
Okay.
So if we were to go online and we were to pull up a chat window, okay?
Yes.
And we were to chat with something, if we could be convinced on our end that it was human, then it would have passed the Turing test.
Okay.
So, I don't know. It's just a threshold.
They've started to.
Yeah, I think you think about a lot of recent things.
Yeah.
And we're getting close, yeah.
But the interesting thing to me is we've had fear of it for so long. Movies about it and all sorts of amazing, crazy ideas of how it's going to kill us all.
Mm-hmm.
Will that help us stop that in the future? I don't know.
That's a good question. As with a lot of things, science related, but specifically technology, I do think that humanity overall does a pretty poor job of asking if we should do things that we can do.
Yes.
And maybe it is time to check and make sure that our morality is advancing at the same rate as our technology.
No.
And I don't think it is either.
Oh, I enjoy being a basilisk.
Yep.
All right. Well, good luck to all of you in the future.
Sorry, guys.
Yeah.
If you're being tortured by the robots, we'll be right there with you.
Yeah. Or just blame it on us. We'll take the hit.
We'll take the fall for you.
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah. If you have any thoughts or questions or comments,
one last thought for you.
Yeah.
Am I a bad person to think I would be happy if a million people got screwed because of us, because of the fact that many
people
listen to our podcast?
Hey, man, we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens when the machines get here.
I don't care if you're being tortured. Thank you for listening.
We got our moment of fame. So, Yeah, well, if you have any feedback on this, I think this is a great episode for comments. What do you think of technology? What do you think the future of technology looks like? Do you see sort of a dystopia where the machines take over? Do you see something positive where, you know, we enhance ourselves as humans because of technology?
Technology remains a tool of ours. Yeah. And
so we'd love to hear. So, again, this should be on the new website, selfproclaimedintellectuals.com.
That's old news by now.
Give us some feedback, and we'll catch you next time.
Bye.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no one has gone before.
If you are still listening, we would like to thank you. We know you are either a Trekkie and wanted to listen to the entire theme song, an SPI fan, and you would listen to the end no matter what, or you're very bored. We'll accept any of the reasons. Thanks again for listening. Have a great day. Seriously, you can go.